216-474-0092. Could this investigation of Emmanuel Clase, Luis Ortiz still being investigated, could this affect your fandom? Could this affect your fandom of any sort? Because you know, we had a conversation. I don't want to be stupid and naive about it, even though I can be stupid and naive many times. I think for the general fan today, I think they're sick. I think they're sick, not just about this situation with Emmanuel Clase. I think the entire winter and this entire string of everything that's gone on, where you have not been a very competitive team, you can't get anything going offensively. Anybody who you've had a chance to be excited about has probably gotten hurt at some point or another. You just haven't been a competitive team when you were in the ALCS last year. And it looks like you're heading backwards, and that last season might have just been a fluke for all we know, and that you're in the middle of a major retooling. Now, I want to give the organization some time, but when you go from the LCS, you're supposed to throw in. You're not supposed to bow out after an ALCS run, at least your first one. A lot of fans are upset, and I think that a lot of fans might be feeling a little bit of apathy going, you know what? What else is going to happen? You're not taking the season seriously. I'm not going to take you seriously. You saw what happened last night where Cade Smith comes in, gets blown up. It was just a bad capper to a really crappy day as a Guardians fan. And maybe some people are going, Uncle, that's it for me. That's it. Now, to not be naive, because I want to get to the phones here in a second. This ain't going to be the last one we do it. I don't think it's some epidemic of legalized sports gaming. I think this is probably something that has been, things like this has probably been going on in some capacity in all major sports for a while. And I think a lot of people have wondered about it for a while. But remember, before this, they were not corporate partners. Sports betting houses were not corporate partners with leagues. Now that they're corporate partners, this is done more rigorously than it ever has. I mean, Lima, you and I had this discussion. This was with the Malik Beasley situation. You and I had this discussion going, okay, when does the system get broken? Is this a broken system? And Lima, you said, no, the system's working. They're finding these improprieties here. And I'm going, well, yeah, now they are finding these improprieties because they have money at stake in their own business relationships. So they have to protect whatever sanctity of sports that they have.
Well, they're seeing the bets, too. They have access to those. When it was behind closed doors, when it was at the barbershops or it was the seedy alleys, they didn't know where the big money was being wagered. They might have had a few sharps kind of getting intel, but that was it. Now they know immediately, like the amount of college baseball a year ago. Do you remember that? College baseball last year, games were taken off the board immediately based on one bet. Like, that's incredible. And then it triggered. It triggered their alarms so that they knew to investigate stuff.
It's almost as if you wonder if some lines are put out there in some sports just to see if they can get anybody in on it. Like, it's not entrapment because you can't trap it on whether or not someone wants to put some in there. But, my God, you start to wonder, it's like, did they just put it out there to see if anybody's on the take on something like this so they can prove a point? Because they seem to find whoever they're looking for.
If I wanted to disadvantage a rival, like, let's say we were talking about, like, you know, a big, big game or whatever. Could you throw down so much money on a first pitch prop that would actuate these alarms just so it would get back into the heads and then you'd call the organization and go, did you see how much money was just wagered on this?
Honestly, I think not. I think not. If you had just because never mind. Maybe it would. If you just started, like, if I just got an account. And I decided, hey, you know what? Today's game one of the ALCS. Yeah. We're back in the ALCS.
20 grand.
We're going up against Garrett Cole. And Garrett Cole's going to, you know what? I'm going to throw 20 grand all of a sudden on a first pitch ball.
Yeah.
Whatever the max is, I'm going to put the max is.
The alarms would go off. They'd get a call.
Because you would go, this is a first time person?
Can I just
this a new
this
member?
Alarm
you should.
Real quick.
Reckless speculation.
Is he not right? Is he not right?
I mean, yeah, but there are certain other things in there. It's not just a ball. It's got to be like a certain mile an hour and all that, too.
Well, yeah, what can you actually bet on? I mean, this is part of it, right?
Because these are micro bets, by the way. Yeah,
so that's why, presumably, and now this is speculation, but presumably the reasons that especially Ortiz got flagged, it's because it's like, all right, I'm a starting pitcher, two pitches. Could you see yourself being corrupted at the lowest level? You're not being asked to throw a game, most likely.
True.
Because that's obvious. That's obvious. And your career would be on the line. You'd have to, they'd have to make it worth your while.
Starting pitchers, too. How many pitches do they throw away? They're throwaway pitches. They're literally called that.
Yes.
They are thrown with the intent to not be a strike.
Mm-hmm.
To maybe get a guy to swing. Now, it's later. It's never at the beginning of an at-bat, really. Unless you have a guy that's just swinging out of his shoes and you can throw something that cuts across the plate. But, I mean, yeah, I see it. If I was a underpaid major league prospect, I might take that jump too. But
I'm going to get to these phones here in a moment. 216-474-0092. Can I just say this as well, just to speculate if we're going to do a wild speculation about the other thing we were talking about? Emmanuel Clase seems to be a very competitive guy. This is what surprised me. I mean, when he closes out games, I mean, you can tell he's on a 50,000-foot ledge there. So that's why the scenario that's being thrown around where organized crime could be involved in it in some way and there could be threats or something like that, which is unfounded right now, unfounded certainly, but that would certainly be applicable in that case. Now, I don't know much about Luis Ortiz, but we've gotten to know Emmanuel Clase on the mound for quite some time here over the last few years. And you can tell he's pretty intense. 216-474-0092. So I don't think I'd be wondering if he played for the New York Mets, but I know of what Emmanuel Clase is on the mound here with the Cleveland Guardians, and so that's why it is very surprising to us. Jimmy Haslam going to join the media at noon today. You will hear that live on The Fan. Let me get to Steve in Cleveland. You're first up on The Fan. Hello, Steve.
Hello, gentlemen. Good to talk to you.
Glad to have you, Steve. Go ahead.
I think Class A, no matter how this turns out, you got to go. No one's going to, I mean, I know it sucks, but I don't want to ruin his career. He could go somewhere else, but every time he gets on the mound and he'll throw a wild ball, he'll do something that can outcome the game. Those kind of things, I mean, I don't think he has a chance. And if he's found guilty, then everybody, all the high ups, got to go.
Wow.
Because no one's ever going to trust us again.
I don't know if that. I don't think the high ups like the. Are you talking the manager and Antonetti and Chernoff and everybody?
I'm talking about the executive people, because these are people that are supposed. They're responsible for everything that happens below them, if they like it or not. And the thing is if you recall that Shoeless Joe, he got accused of it, and he to his dying day he said he had nothing to do with it, but people still didn't believe him.
Well, Buck Weaver tried to take him to court until his dying day, and they finally just kind of looked the other way. Not looked the other way, but they kind of went the other way on that when it comes to the
Hall
of Fame.
Steve, did you care about the Ohtani interpreter situation? Did you care about that story?
No, but I care because this is my team.
Yeah, but I'm saying, okay, same situation. Let's do it. I'm not going to name names, but the superstar of our team and his interpreter. Would you consider that a big deal or not?
Yeah, because you would never trust it. You would always have something in the back of your mind saying there's some form of cheating. And so the integrity of the game's gone.
Well, if he was, I got to tell you, Steve, thank you very much for the call. I got to disagree. If he was found to be not guilty of any wrongdoing whatsoever, if he was found completely exonerated in this investigation that's going on, I would be relieved, and I would say, all right, whatever he has, they might move on from him naturally at this point, but whatever, I'm willing to bring him back in. I have to wonder, what did the front office know? If the front office knew things and they were still out there, like, yeah, you probably got to move on from these guys. Or if the manager knew anything, like, yeah, you probably got to move on from these guys. But it's very simple. Like, hey, a lot of guys do it. They're grown adults. They're in the privacy of their own home. If there's a definite possibility they didn't know about these things, I don't know if I want to make those guys answer for this. Do you think that's right or wrong, Anthony?
Oh,
the front office and manager answer for that. Now, if we find out there were 18 players involved in this, well, like obviously something's
bad
here.
It becomes hard to understand why they wouldn't know something. Yeah. You would think if it were just two guys that happen to have lockers right next to each other, and they had devised a formula to where one pitch a day, two pitches a day, that was their level of culpability.
Yes.
I think it's hard to go after managers because they're doing it. They're devising it intentionally to be under the radar.
Right now, I feel that there is plausible deniability.
Yeah.
To say that other people did not know. Now, if this turns into that, what this Hector Gomez thing, which is unfounded, that there may be more coming in the coming days, which Major League Baseball has already said there weren't. The Guardians have put that statement out that Major League Baseball has already told them there weren't going to be more coming out in the coming days. But if more were to come out in the coming days, then you would have this discussion about these guys' futures. But you can see where two guys whose lockers are next to each other, you might wonder, you might ask, if Luis Ortiz got in trouble, would you ask Emmanuel Clase? Maybe. Emmanuel Clase could always tell you, absolutely not. Absolutely not. I'm not involved in anything. Well, am I going to say that he's lying to my face? Does this affect your fandom as a Cleveland Guardians? I had one caller already said he's got to go no matter what. Clase's got to go no matter what. I'm like, well, let him have his day. If they find out good, he's exonerated, it don't look good. Yeah. If they find that there was an impropriety there with him and Luis Ortiz, yeah, they got to go. They can't pitch for your team anymore. I don't know if they can pitch in Major League Baseball anymore. Well, that's a scary. That might be Owen. That's a scary Terry defense. Is that hey, I just wasn't good anymore. When it came down to Terry Rozier in the NBA. Evan in Bainbridge. I had to hang up on him by accident. He's back. Hello, Evan.
Hello. How are you doing today, gentlemen?
We're doing well. Go right on ahead.
Hey, I'll be quick. I generally believe where there's smoke, there's fire, but I want to look at this on the other way. You know, what do we get out of this if Clase is completely exonerated? He's done nothing wrong. You know, do we get a sorry from the MLB? Sorry, we blew up your season and took the best pitcher in baseball off the field for a month. I mean, what do you guys think about that? Do we just move on? I mean, we're ruining his image here. Look, I think he may have done something, but, you know, flip side, what if he didn't? Our season's gone. So I just want to know what you guys think about that.
Well, there's also, okay, what made people think of this? Can they say he's just bad? Because then we're talking 60 Minutes pieces here if we're talking about the other stuff that is to, would be a reason that you would. The whole mob thing and everything like that. I mean, that's big, big, big bombshell stuff. As far that, I mean, they might just have to say, like, hey, they were bad pitches. But two guys with lockers next to each other, not pitching well on the first pitch of at-bats, it does seem to be there's a lot of smoke there, Evan. There's a lot of smoke, man.
Doesn't look good, but I would love an apology from the MLB if he's completely cleared.
I don't know what they're going to
do. In the middle of a playoff race.
You're right. I don't think and thank you for the call, Evan. I don't think an apology is going to be good enough. I think a lot of people look at it and go, yeah, because I think a lot of people, especially like a guy like Owen, you're going to look at it and go, wait,
where's my 12 wins?
Where's my wins?
Well, I would also ask.
You bombed my season.
Yeah, where is.
Especially what if they trade Stephen Kwan?
Because of all this?
Yes.
Yeah. Have you.
What if they had a trade for Class A and were going to get bats and now they can't do that?
Right, even though the funny thing is fans would have erupted if they would have traded Class A and this hadn't happened. So you're right, though. I would say, like, the Terry Rozier thing, they are still investigating. Chris Haynes came out a couple weeks ago and said we are still – the league is still investigating this along with federal authorities. And have we heard any denial yet from Class A? Because
no.
I imagine you'd be denying. I don't care what an agent would tell you. I don't care what a lawyer would say. Guys typically tend to deny things. Guys deny things even when they're guilty. And have we seen any kind of denial yet?
Zach in Akron, you're next up on the fan. Hello, Zach.
Hey, good morning, guys.
Hi.
I just got a point here. Quick point. I think the fans need thicker skin because if it's just a few pitches and if it turns out that's the case, the pros outweigh the cons. The utility's there. I think you keep the guy. Ohtani proved. Fans will sweep something as big as this under the rug. And I think this is a little mini case of a Shohei Ohtani, if you know what I mean.
I don't agree with you at all, Zach. I don't agree with you whatsoever. Shohei Ohtani, if you wanted to even condone such a thing, right, which is, hey, his interpreter, according to the letter of the law, was the one who was doing the impropriety. You can think what you think, and I think what I think, and I think we might be on the same page about a lot of that. But you could even say he's the biggest star, one of the two biggest stars in the game, which makes him one of the biggest stars in professional sports. These guys, I mean, they're pitchers. They pitch for my favorite team. If I find out that they were throwing, I mean, if I find out they were throwing balls on purpose for crying out loud, what, I'm not going to let them hear that after I've had eight beer? What if I do the 999 challenge and Emmanuel Clase is out there? You're telling me rip behind the dugout and I'm going to yell at Emmanuel Clase if he throws the first one in the dirt? You're crazy, Zach. They can't roll them back out there.
I think we're in the playoff race, like you guys said. I think he gives the guy, and now if it's something bigger, if it's a one puzzle piece of 1,000 puzzle pieces, I think you stop. I think you stop and reevaluate. But if it's something small, I think you let it go. I think you go past it.
No. Thank you for the call. You're in breach of contract by doing something like that. No. Anthony in Cleveland Heights, you're next up on the fan.
Hello, all.
Hi.
Hey, I wanted to defend Colin and defend Owen there. I'm a Guardians fan first, and it sucks because, I'm in Cleveland Heights, and I look forward to hopping on one of the apps close to game time and picking up a cheap seat and heading down there and, having a good experience with a beer and some peanuts and so forth. And, you know, you can't help but think that the season just got torpedoed completely. The one thing I wanted to say, though, is I've listened over the course of the last few weeks when Anthony is defending the Dolans and asking what exactly they should be doing with regard to the payroll. And I think your credit, Ken, you're maybe channeling the voice of the fans and maybe not necessarily taking your own position on this. But, you know, it's difficult for me to maybe find solidarity with some of these loudmouth fans when they're the very ones who said, you got to do something this year because we got within three games of the World Series. So just trade somebody and get somebody and do something. And how about Class A? Let's trade Class A because we got Cade Smith. Well, you saw what happened with that last night. So it just, part of me is I get irritated with this hot take stuff because I know Guardians fans were reticent to say, wait a minute, I don't know if Cade Smith is ready for the closing.
Well, I got to tell you, Anthony, and I know where you're going on that. I got to let you go because we got to get to this break and get the ball. I'll just say this real, real, real quick. I think some people were
Someone knew where he was going with it.
I think that people were just trying to beat it to the punch of Class A falling apart. I think that being a closer is a very difficult job. I think it's one of the most difficult jobs in all professional sports, to be frank. I think to just assume it was going to be Cade Smith and Cade Smith's going to be able to fill in, I think that we're not giving the proper respect to the position that it is. Being a closer, I'm sorry, if you're just thinking that any guy can close, you just don't know baseball. It's that simple. And that's, hey, I'm a football guy, but you know sports. 931 on the fan, and make sure no one thinks that this is recorded. We're joined by Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger. He's the host of the Best Football Show podcast. Make sure to check out the Best Football Show on the Odyssey app, which is free, or wherever you get your podcast. Brian Baldinger joins us right now. Hello, Baldy.
Good morning, guys. How are you?
We're doing wonderful. I know you're making your tours and you're making your rounds of all the teams, and it's Hall of Fame weekend, so this is usually when the national media descends upon Cleveland. As of right now, are the Browns making a major mistake if they start anybody but Joe Flacco week one?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, I think Joe is the most qualified. He's won games for Cleveland. Forget about his age. The arm is just as good as ever. He's in great shape, and he understands what he's doing out there right now. I don't think there's any rush. I mean, I don't know what Kenny's status is with his hamstring, and I haven't seen the rookies play yet, but I would think that, it would behoove the Browns to win week one if their best chance to win is, I think, with Joe right now.
Okay, that's fine, Baldy, and we respect your football acumen. 9-9 yesterday, Shador Sanders. 9-9. I mean, come on. 9-9.
All right. We're charting these practices now.
Now, touchdowns.
Honestly, I mean, I see this stuff. Like, I know you're tongue in cheek here with this thing, but I mean, I do see these people that think like this is like I don't know, like this is how you're winning the job on September 7th is by what you do here, in a practice session. Like, it's just not really the way it is.
You know, we joked, we had John Greco on earlier, and somebody, we like to bring on the football guys, the guys in the trenches, and he said, you know, he used to laugh about that. Guys talking about, especially like first day of pads, and you've got, you know, yeah, the people, the consumers, they want to know this stuff. They want to know how many completions, how many touchdowns, but the people that actually played the game, you know the circumstances, they can certainly dictate things. In Pittsburgh, they're talking about how Big Ben used to throw interceptions intentionally to either show up receivers or whatever. So what can we take away? What should we be looking for when we're watching these quarterbacks operate?
Well, I mean, you're looking for completions. I mean, I'm not undermining, the stat yesterday. But you're looking for completions. You're looking for command. You're looking for growth. You're looking for, does he get to a second read when Jerry Jeudy isn't open on the first read? Can he get to Cedric Tillman? Whatever. I mean, you're just looking for growth within the offense. Now, some of these drills, the offense, the defense is coming after you, and sometimes, Myles Garrett is, saving him for something a little bit more important. So, I mean, I do think you have to kind of temper the enthusiasm, but you're looking for growth. You're looking for, like in any position. When I first started out as a rookie, free agent, I mean, I couldn't block Randy White the first 2 weeks of practice. But when I did block him in the third week, I went out and partied my ass off. I felt like I was getting better. I could stop the best defensive tackle in football. So you're just looking for growth. Sometimes it's minuscule. Sometimes it's just the way that you get the verbiage out of your mouth on an audible call. Sometimes it's identifying a particular defense and what they're doing. There's so many different ways that we can't really see. But, the quarterback rooms, the guys in the huddle, they can see it, and they know when it's going on.
Brian Baldinger joining us on the show. There's been a lot of – I mean, when you have four guys competing for a quarterback job, allegedly, I mean, I really think it was Kenny Pickett and Joe Flacco maybe competing for the starting job, and then who's going to be the primary backup after that. You get a lot of crazy scenarios thrown out there. One of those scenarios was trading Dylan Gabriel, a third-round pick, or Shedeur Sanders, a fifth-round pick. If you're the Browns, I don't think anybody's going to offer you something crazy for either one of these guys. Would you ever entertain trading either one of these guys? I mean, what does it hurt to keep them there to see whether or not one of them has it, especially a guy like maybe Shedeur, who a lot of people feeling his ceiling is going to be very high?
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't trade him. I mean, you just drafted him. You don't know what you have yet. I mean, you haven't played a game yet. I wouldn't trade either one of them. But they also knew that when they drafted these guys and they traded for Kenny Pickett and they brought Joe back, they knew it was going to be a crowded quarterback room. And we all knew when they went to camp with four quarterbacks like this, that the reps were, it wasn't going to favor anybody in trying to win a job right now. Just because it's so limited with basically one practice a day, if you get that, and just three preseason games. It's not going to be a substantial, amount of work for anyone. And you really want to make the evaluation, when Betonio and Teller and, the whole offense line is out there. And so it's very limited. It's very difficult. But I would not trade either one of them right now. I'd like to see them in some game action to see what they look like.
Brian Baldinger with us. So Kevin Stefanski has evolved the offense depending on who the quarterback has been. We've seen it change up in season when Flacco came in a couple of years ago, helped him get to the playoffs. Then it was Deshaun Watson. It changed again. Now it's evolved again depending on who wins this battle. So how difficult is that in terms of an evaluation? Because, yesterday I'm seeing a lot of short passes mostly from the team, but yet, we as fans, we want to see guys that have a ceiling. We want to see guys take chances and throw the ball down the field.
Well, I mean, that's how ultimately you're going to beat Baltimore or Pittsburgh or Cincinnati with, their ability to score points, especially Cincinnati and Baltimore. So, you got to be able to put points up, and points come out of the offense with explosive plays. So you got to take your shots. But that's kind of how the offense is. I mean, I think you're going to go back to running the football and play action passes off of it. And that plays to Joe's strength, ability to read the defense on those deep drops, and the offense line giving him time to take the shots to Jerry Jeudy and the group going down the field. So, I mean, those are going to come. They're not the highest percentage of throws, You know, the shorter passes, the plays in the middle of the field are the better percentage. But you're going to have to take your shots if you're going to compete in this division right now.
How much does, for a guy like Kevin Stefanski, 6 years in, he's been with some of these vets all 6 years, how much does their opinion weigh into when a rookie would get to play or when a younger quarterback would get to play like Kenny Pickett?
You know, I think Kevin is a smart guy. You know, I mean, he's been handed a pretty difficult hand here. But, you know, he's been a good coordinator. He's been a good play caller. You know, it's a lot to ask right now from Kevin, but I think he has a plan about how he's going to go about getting these guys a certain amount of reps to really make some, you know, deeper evaluations about who could be the backup. Because I think Joe is the starter. So who's going to be the backup to Joe? And how long is Joe the starter? I mean, if they get off to a rough start, does it make any sense to, you know, to play Joe if, you know, I mean, it looks like you're not going to have a winning season. You're not going to be very competitive. I mean, you might as well put some of those guys in. Those are decisions that get made maybe in October. And so for right now, it's about, you know, making sure you get the right evaluation for the guy that's going to be the next man up, because that guy is always one play away.
Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger joining us on the show. Do you find Kevin Stefanski to be a top half NFL head coach?
Yeah, I like Kevin. I like Kevin a lot. He's gotten to the playoffs, what, twice now? You know, it's not, you know, they've had difficulty, obviously, at the quarterback position. Nobody has juggled more quarterbacks than Kevin. You know, he looked a lot better as a play caller when Kirk Cousins lined up every single day in Minnesota as the quarterback, and they won a lot of games. But I would say that he's in the upper half. I think he's got a command of the team. I think they respond to him. And, you know, for those kind of things, he's got some stability because of it.
You know, it's unfortunate, Baldy, what's happened at the start of camp, the running back position. You've had an injury, and then you've had a player not signed yet who, unfortunately, is dealing with some legal issues in Florida with Quinshon Judkins. Now, he was taken 36 overall. First of all, how big of a blow is it for him not to be there now? And does it matter whether he's a running back, whether he's a tight end, a quarterback? Do you think it matters, depending on the position, on how much they'll be behind?
Well, he's going to be behind. It's, you know, it's very unfortunate, but it's the reality. And so you have to deal with it. But I would say if there's one position that you can get up to speed quicker than any other position on the field is the running back position. I mean, so much of that is just instincts and vision, and it looks like Quinshon has all of those abilities. He was that's kind of the sweet spot of the draft for running backs, top of the second round. That's where he was. So, look, I think you know, I'm not going to say you're going to plug and play him whenever he gets this legal matter handled, and we'll see the fallout of that. But I would say, you know, if there's one position you can get him on the field the quickest and count on some production, it's the running back position.
What does the success look like if Aaron Rodgers works out in Pittsburgh? Do you think he'll work out in Pittsburgh?
I think he's got a good chance. I thought that he struggled last year, but he was banged up for much of the year, especially to start the season.
Mm-hmm.
And they were the most penalized team in football last year. I mean, they had the ball on the 1 yard line against Denver in week four, and they couldn't score. And all they needed was a touchdown to win the game. You know, they were so heavily penalized. I don't think you're going to get that in a Mike Tomlin coach team. So I think the stability that every quarterback really requires to be successful, he's going to get that. He's got a star X receiver that I think is going to get a lot of targets in DK. I think he's going to fall in love with his 6'7" tight end, Darnell Washington. And if the line, you know, comes together, they've been working on it for 3 years now, trying to get this thing together. If it comes together, I think he's got a chance for some success. But, you know, watching him last year, I mean, he was not great at the end of games when you needed Aaron to be great. He looked like a 40-year-old quarterback for a lot of the season last year. I know he finished strong, but, I mean, I think you have to, if you're evaluating Aaron, and I'm going to see him tomorrow in Latrobe, but if you're evaluating him right now, you got to think, and you got to play against him in game plan. You got to think you're going to get the best of Aaron Rodgers and not a broken down 41-year-old quarterback. You got to think that the arm is going to be elite. Decision making is going to be elite. And that's how you have to game plan it right now.
You had a chance to talk to Lamar Jackson as part of your coverage recently. When you are at Baltimore, obviously they are looking at getting through in the playoffs and having Lamar play at a different level in the postseason. Do you think it changes anytime soon with them, or do you think they'll just continue to be a great regular season team? He'll be a great regular season quarterback, but come postseason, there's still some issues.
Yeah, I don't buy that. I mean, I know they've lost in the postseason. I mean, Mark Andrews catches the ball at the goal line, he probably win that game. And they march on, they beat Buffalo. Those things happen. But I think he just is an improving player. He's 28 years old. I mean, Peyton Manning won his Super Bowl when he was 31. I mean, you look through the list of guys who won Super Bowls and what their age was sometimes. Sometimes you just got to keep chopping wood. I mean, Lamar is not going to regress. He's not going backwards. The guy's only improving. Nobody sees the field on the dead run better than him in this business. And so, you know, you throw 41 touchdowns and four interceptions and run for about 1,000 yards. I mean, we've never seen anything like it. And I think in the third year of Todd Monken's system and what T. Martin is helping him do at the quarterback position as his coach, I think he's just going to improve. And he is a hungry, hungry man, not just to win a Super Bowl, but to win multiple Super Bowls. I mean, that's how he's wired. So I got to think that you're going to see an improved play in the postseason. There was a time they get to the postseason, he was injured. Now he seems to have gotten over all of that. And I think the better days are in front of him.
Brian Baldinger joining us here on the hotline. Brian, does it bother you what guys who didn't play at a high level have said about Lamar Jackson and Josh Allen? Are they just the victims of playing in the same generation as Patrick Mahomes?
Well, I mean, there was always, you know, there was Tom Brady before that, and there was, you know, Troy Aikman and guys that won a lot of Super Bowls. But unfortunately or unfortunately, all quarterbacks get measured by how they play in the postseason. Peyton Manning was basically in that same category of Josh and Lamar until he won a Super Bowl. He didn't win a national championship at Tennessee. T. Martin did. I mean, that's what they said about Peyton, and he walked into the Hall of Fame. So all quarterbacks, you know, get scrutinized a little bit differently. But until Josh and Lamar actually win a Super Bowl the way Jalen Hurts just did this year, look, Jalen Hurts just won a Super Bowl this year, and people can't figure out how to put him in the top 10 as, you know, quarterbacks in this league, and all he does is win. So, I mean, everybody's going to be scrutinized different, and that's just part of the territory and part of the position and part of, you know, making elite money in this business right now.
It seems like in many ways, Baldy, that the NFL has become the NBA. Only seems like I hear about four or five teams that everybody references that can win the Super Bowl. Is there a team outside of the normal ones that everybody talks about that you think we are all overlooking?
Well, I think you'd be crazy if you're overlooking Washington. I think you'd be crazy if you're overlooking Tampa. You know,
Tampa.
Uh-oh.
Oh, boy. Baker plays.
I mean,
Tampa.
You'd just be crazy. I mean, all they've done is win the division 4 years in a row. And, you know, Baker just had one of the top 10. I know you don't want to hear this in Cleveland, but, you know, there's only 10 quarterbacks in the history of this game that did what Baker did last year. Throw for over 40 touchdowns and 4,500 yards. And he's got, now, when his left tackle gets back, it's a big blow to that team right now, but he will be back, Tristan Wirfs. You know, he's a guy that can line up with Miles, you know, and go toe-to-toe without help and do, you know, probably as good as anybody else, be able to handle Miles one-on-one. So, and he is a difference maker at that position. But, you know, I think that Tampa is, you know, they've improved their defense with what they did in the draft, and they ran the ball great last year, something they weren't able to do when Tom Brady was the quarterback and winning a Super Bowl. So I think that's just an improving team right now.
Brian, we can't thank you enough for the time. We know you're busy as hell with all the training camp stuff going on. Look forward to seeing you. Look forward to watching you on NFL Network. Yeah. Take care.
All right. You bet, guys. Talk to you soon.
Thank you. Brian Baldinger joining us. Odyssey NFL insider Brian Baldinger, host of the Best Football Show podcast. Make sure to check out the Best Football Show on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. No one's going to believe me when I say this because I'm a host in Cleveland. And I had given up on him. I had absolutely given up. I didn't want to go trade for the guy they traded for, but I didn't think that he was going to be able to get the thing out of the fire. I don't have ill will or any angered feelings or anything about the entire Baker situation or about Baker Mayfield. I don't. No one wants to believe that because it's fun to argue. I look at it as a mistake that, all right, they're going to have to learn from at some point. Like, I don't know how Dylan Gabriel or Shedeur Sanders are going to play, right? So we'll find out about that. But say they perform the way a lot of people think they're going to perform, and we go get a quarterback next year. I think we're probably going to, if you are in this generation in the AFC, and you were going up against guys who are already in their prime, Burrow, Lamar, Josh Allen, Mahomes, we're going to do all this again with the next guy. Unless he comes in and he's as good as Mahomes.
Yeah.
We're going to do this again. So it's, I hope those guys either
plateau or their physical traits start to erode because they're going to be getting into their 30s.
But I'm telling you, it's going to happen again because you're going to raise the profile of what this football team's supposed to be. So when it comes to Baker, yes, I would much rather be arguing about what it takes for Baker Mayfield and the Cleveland Browns to get through the second round of the playoffs. I think that's where we'd be. I think we'd be arguing that he can't beat Lamar in the postseason or he can't beat Josh Allen or Mahomes, and I think that's a much healthier place to be in than where we're at right now, clearly. But I do feel that all those guys are still going to be there and we're still going to have that argument with whoever, whether it be the Colin Cowherd theory that goes out there and ends up being Arch Manning, probably won't. Whether it be Drew Aller, who knows? Whether it be Lenoris Sellers, whether it be anybody, I think we'll have that same conversation. I don't want the guy to be a bust, especially because we're going to have 2 first-round picks, so I'm already holding my breath. But I feel we're going to be in that same spot. I hope that whoever they get, one, they're able to handle him better than what the Browns did with Baker. Two, they handle it, being the quarterback X, handles it better than what Baker did, because Baker's even been honest about that. And yeah, I know, when you're being really successful, it's easy to look back on things and go, oh yeah, I admit this, that, and the other. Maybe he's being that way, I'm not sure. It's easier to do that, fair. But I hope everybody handles the situation. I just look at it as a mistake that they have to grow from. That, and even myself in talking about the Browns, like, will I reach a point in 4 years with quarterback X where I'm like, you sure you guys want to do this? You sure you want to run this kid out of town? You sure we want to have this conversation again? Like, that's the only thing I try to do is grow from a mistake. Do we want to give up 3 first-round picks for a quarterback? Do we want to do that? Why is he available? In a league that's so strong for quarterbacks, why is this guy? Like, learn from a mistake. He got $30 million guaranteed. I could be petty and say, why didn't you pay him? Because you could always pay him earlier and then not have to pay him later, but at the same time, he's getting $30 million guaranteed next year. Congratulations on all his success. I like that Brian Boldinger ripped on camp stats. I love that he ripped on camp stats. I'm not opposed to the content. I'm just as guilty as anybody. It drives content. It drives SEO. You see something where you see Shedeur Sanders 9 for 9. I got to click on that. I know that drives content. I'm not going to introduce it into an argument for Shedeur Sanders, or certainly not against him. 9 for 9, you're not going to introduce it against Shedeur Sanders, but I'm not going to dump on the guy if he goes 4 for 12 according to the stats, or if he goes 9 for 9 according to the stats.
Well, what does it say to you that I let off the show or when we first started talking Browns today and I said, yeah, I don't care what the other quarterbacks are doing. I only care about one. Not even the starter. I mean, yeah, I hope Flacco is not looking like he fell off a cliff.
I kind of want to ask if everybody else believes the thing you're believing. Do you really only care about one quarterback?
I do. Yeah, I mean, I don't.
I think it just hit it right there for a lot of folks.
Owen is telling me to save it, so I will save it.